Oi, lads, did you miss out on the Jaren's Outpost Kickstarter and wish you weren't such a big doofus? Well, fear not. Late pledges are now open and they'll be open for a little while. So just head to Kickstarter, search for D&Ds for Nerds or Jaren's Outpost and slam that late pledge button. Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Jaren's Outpost Development Blog. I'm Joel.
I'm Jackson.
I'm Adam.
And today we're talking about adapting characters.
Yes, we're talking about taking the characters from the Jaren's Outpost campaign, which hopefully you're also listening to, the remastered version, and trying to turn them from funny D&D characters that we played into, playable characters. A set of rules, yeah, in a board game, which was like both extremely easy and extremely difficult at the same time, I think.
I know where you can kind of like look at me like, well, they are already characters in D&D that have their own class abilities and that kind of stuff.
Just so do that.
Just do that, guys. Yeah. Duh. You're like, well, yeah, but
it's a starting point.
It's not even the same genre of board game. You can't that. Yeah,
exactly.
It's what's happened is, and I think this is very interesting, is there is a set of rules in D&D that informed a character creation, and then that character creation was used to create a set of rules.
That's very true. Kind of, in a way, you work backwards to do it. Mm. Well, yeah, but what's also tricky, and we talked about this, I think, a bit in the last one, is that when you're making a character, because of the rules of the game, you have like a couple of areas where you can make them feel different, and that's the movement, the special ability, and the stats.
Yes.
And so what you have to do is you have to take the D&D character and like synthesize it into using, you got to be like a Greg Pierce, he's a slippery big cock deal. But what does that mean in terms of like, you know,
movement
when he moves
on a
forward?
Yeah.
What does that look like and how does that play?
Yeah. So like I remember it very initially we were playing around with, I think alignment was an issue.
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, we play D&D a lot. Yeah. Alex, who did the very first iteration of the game, had never really played a lot of D&D. And so it was kind of trying to understand, knew a little bit of it here and there, and getting some of the aspects of D&D and then to put in the board game and to see if that really worked or not. Mm. And there's some stuff that I'm like, D&D is complicated.
Yeah,
like, there are so many rules and, you know, there's a whole book about, you know, I want to say just on grappling.
Yeah, exactly. And also the thing with D&D is that it's a set of rules to tell a story, which is not what a board game is.
No. Mm.
Like D&D is, you know, oh, in this game, you're going to want to assassinate someone, but we want to make it kind of feel fair when you do it. Whereas a board game, you're trying to achieve a very specific set of outcomes, and then it's like the rules of the board game is what allows you to do that. So, but yeah, one of the initial things in the very first like foundational version of the game, and it stuck around for a little bit too, was the idea of alignment. So some of the NPCs were good aligned, some were evil aligned, and some were neutral.
Yeah.
And that we realized, like, I don't know, I want to say like maybe 6 months. Like it was one of the pretty early.
I was going to say, I think maybe by two plays of the thing, we were like, we should nix this.
We were like, I don't know what it's doing.
We shouldn't
really
do alignments. It was just one of those things because it added more symbols as well in terms of when you're doing the whole board game. Like, you know, you're trying to create your own symbols to mean certain things. And so I was like, well, if you're a good align and you end on a, you know, hostile, a bad alignment, then they're going to take damage. But if it's neutral, like it's fine. If it's and they just kind of added to this, like
it came from a design principle, I think, which was trying to turn Dungeons and Dragons into a board game.
Yeah. You know, absolutely. Which is funny because I've played board games that basically have that premise.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I've never really loved it.
Yeah.
Like, to me, those feel like such completely different worlds.
Yeah.
And whenever I'm playing a board game, and I think I talked about this back years ago, Zamet, when we had
a board game
board
podcast.
Cramps or whatever.
Brain cramps.
Brain cramps.
Which is our board game podcast. I always find that there are these board games that try to do like the fantasy D&D thing, and every time I play them, I'm like, why am I not just playing D&D?
I think I've said it before, I'll say it again. Gloomhaven does combat, like a board game, and does combat so really well that it does feel like, I think it, honestly, I think it does like combat better than like even just regular D&D. But I don't understand why it's a board game.
Exactly.
It's an incredible feat. It's such an impressive game. I am so like impressed by what the creators did with it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't understand though Like, I think why
some, yeah.
I think some people find D&D and role-playing games, I think they find them very intimidating because there's a very huge self-directed aspect to it.
Absolutely, you can 100%,
get,
yeah.
You can get, right. like, a pre-written module, but that, I mean, not to say that Gloomhaven is cheap, but that is an extra cost, and then it also requires a dungeon master to read through it, understand it, and then, even then, there is still a lot of self-directed stuff where a pre-written module might explain a character's motivations and what they want to do, but it's then still hugely up to...
It does that thing of reducing the... It's just, it's D&D, but you're removing that element of, like, improvisation and of like, I guess the role-playing part of it. You know, and which I get, it is intimidating for some people to be like, it's like performing, you know what I mean? And some people, that's just not what they're into. But I agree. To me, from a personal perspective, I'm like, I love that part of D&D. But anyway, I think, when we initially gave the pitch to Alex tried to incorporate that D&D into it. And I think over time, we've not removed the influence is obviously still there. But a lot of those mechanics, we were like, well, it's actually not relevant to the kind of game we want to make.
I think the design document, if you will, not that there was ever a very standardized design document, but I think the idea swapped from trying to make a Dungeons & Dragons board game with the Jaren's Outpost characters and making a Jaren's Outpost board game.
Absolutely, 100%. 100%,
So it kind of went from this idea of like, okay, get rid of alignment, and then it was like, okay, what characters do we have, and how can we make them different from each other? Because you want to make them all feel a little bit different.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we also then want to kind of like, you know, then, all right, then we really hone in.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, cool. Everyone's got your base movement, and that's kind of just like, you know,
forward, left, right,
right, back.
Back, yeah.
And then it was like, okay, cool. And then we're going to have, you know, seven playing cards or seven movement cards all up. So from that, you got three extra cards to kind of move around.
Yeah,
with.
To do some, have some fun
have some
with,
fun,
you know.
Kind of like, you know, because again, we know, well, why isn't there eight? Why isn't nine? Why isn't there 10 different movement cards? And like, well, I guess, you know, we're doing like this whole 7 days.
Yeah.
You have these kind of options. It does mean you can kind of like double up, but does have those limitations.
I think as well, and I don't know if this is just, and like, it is, this is a weird thing as well. Maybe one day we'll talk about this more in depth. But we've been playing this game for so long that I'm so intimately familiar with it. But I feel like, and again, maybe this is not true, but I feel like having a fewer cards means you learn to understand the cards that you know what I mean?
Yes.
You're like, okay, I got my basic cards, but then these three, if I play this character enough, I'm going to get very comfortable using. I don't know. I think there's some value there.
Yeah, and so it's like that. Health, and like health has always been connected to your bag slots. And it was like, you know, how healthy you are means how more you can like pick up.
If you lose a certain amount of health, you lose one of your bag slots, going down until you're dead.
And then there was initially three different stats: skill, attack, and defense. Defense stayed around for a long time.
A lot longer than it should have.
It survived several iterations.
It survived. Yeah. It went away. Then it came back.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it went again.
Because obviously the game does have like a dice rolling component where you would need to roll a dice to pass a skill check or to pass like a combat check. And those, you want them as low as possible because you need to hit that number or lower, right?
I remember that being a whole thing.
And that was because of defense. Well, you wanted your defense higher.
Yeah.
And whenever you would explain it this element stayed around long enough that we were showing people the game and like playing it with people who weren't familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And every time they play it, you would be like, you want these low, these high.
So what you want to do is on a D6, you want to roll your dice. And then on your character sheet, your character board, you'll have your target number. So you need to hit that target number or higher. So it's like, you know, if it's a target number is 3, you got to, you know, 4, 5, or 6, right? So you got a good chance. Now you've got an item which adds to that though as well. And so you're like, okay, well, I rolled a 2 and then can I plus that? So that's a 4. And it's like, it just became this weird kind of thing of like, okay, how do you explain that? And then this and then also like the damages. So like, you know, because it means if you roll the number on the thing, which is adding to that, is it means that your target number is actually lower, not higher.
Yeah.
And so I'm so sorry.
There were items as well, if you recall, I'm sure you do, there were items as well that could worsen something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
that's
that also became...
made things really bad.
Yeah.
Because so it just ended up being like, all right, you roll on the dice and then you add your modifiers, which is also kind of like, you know, can be this sort of ham. Holdover of that D&D aspect as well.
For sure. But it was definitely one of those things, like last episode we talked about like desire paths, and that was definitely one of those things where every time we would play it with somebody who wasn't familiar with it, they would be like, I'm annoyed by this. And obviously, I think, you know, that's the thing too, when you're making something and you're putting so much effort and so much of like your heart and soul into it, when people are annoyed, you kind of bristle at that. You kind of want to be like, well, you're just not playing it right. You're just an idiot who doesn't get the game. But then what you got to do is be like, no, you know what? They're right.
So, they are right.
I need to
right.
just like swallow my ego here and be like, you know what?
How do you explain this in a visual language?
Yeah,
because you really have like not a lot of space to tell this. I think one thing we ended up doing was on the character board, as opposed to having numbers.
Yeah,
you just did the dice face.
With
an arrow kind of pointing up. So it was like, okay, so your target number is also on the dice. So cool, there's like the dice face, and then you know up. And then it was, all right, cool. So if I'm picking up a +2 item, that is a +2 after the roll.
Yes, yeah, right. Exactly. So,
you know, then it kind of makes a bit more sense.
Absolutely.
In a very quick visual language kind of way.
For sure,
So yeah, so going back to sort of the characters we had, the initial three, which were the three player characters of the campaign. So it was Periwinkle, Greg Piss, and Leo Shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had this, Leo was an assassin of sorts. You then had Greg Piss, who was the bard, and then you had Periwinkle, who was a bruiser. And so it's like, okay, how do you change these characters enough to kind of like really pare it down to kind of like, how do we want them to be?
Yeah.
And I think it was, for me, that really helped was going, right, if I am walking down the streets of Jaren's outpost, how do I want each one of these to feel?
Yeah, okay, and yeah,
so
yeah. Yes, for sure.
Leo, it was like, right, I want to be able to go quick, also I want to be able to sneak, so I want to be able to kind of like move left, right, and not take damage, and sort of be able to like set up an attack move, and so like, you know, maybe hit and run, so I can like attack someone and keep going. And I think it was the combination of the movement cards, which is hit and run, which is a dash, so you can kind of move two spaces, but you do it like a little bit of damage in the middle, like, you know, the first move, and then you go forward. And then it was a backstab, which was you attack behind you and you don't take any sort of
retaliation.
Yeah. And so it was like once it was getting those two moves kind of paired together that he fell into place.
Yeah, this
for
is
me
really,
at least, when it was like making those
moves. No, I agree. This is a really weird thing. And it's like one of those things where you just kind of, I suppose, you vibe it out. But there does hit a point when you're doing something like this where you're just like,
yes,
the character works. And like, it's not, for me, I don't know if that's just how my brain works, but it's not this thing that I'm like consciously, I don't have it all in my head.
Yeah.
And then I'm like putting the pieces together. It's like you kind of feel it out. And then, but then you hit that moment and you're like, oh, this is perfect. This is kind of how the character always was meant to be somehow.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's a weird thing.
I'm terrible at that. I'm either, my mode is it's always needs to be iterated on or it needs to stop changing now. Lock it in.
Well, that's,
I'm
that's
one of two modes.
I mean, both of those are right. Like, there's definitely, and it's very useful. I think that's has been a very useful role that you've had here, where you're like, stop. Stop messing with it.
Hey, well, chicken's done.
Take it out of the goddamn oven,
I don't know
boys.
About that. I feel like every time I've ever come at it with that sort of perspective, I feel like the two of you have been, I think my always iterate, and maybe this is a dangerous lesson to learn, but I feel like my keep iterating side is always correct, and the two of you have been like, well, what if we fiddled with a little bit more? And I've never been like, oh, go back.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe my own iterate is great.
Well, I think it is just still useful to have somebody who's like, hey, guys, take your fingers out of the pie.
Yeah.
Stop messing with it.
It's very interesting though, Joel, to hear you talking about how you saw it as a thinking about how the character walks down the street. I always took it as more of a maybe a more mechanical look. I always thought of the skill and attack as two sides of a coin, or maybe not a coin, but as two kind of ends of a spectrum. And I always thought every character I peg as being at one end or the other or in the middle.
Yeah,
where,
interesting.
Like, for example, Greg Pierce, he's pegged heavily at the skill end. A Periwinkle is pegged at the combat end. Greg Pierce is in the middle. And then I think sometimes what we've done.
Leo's in the middle.
Sorry. Oh, Leo. I'm so sorry. Fake fan.
You confused me.
I don't even know Leo's full name. Leo Mario?
Close enough.
Yeah.
But then anytime we've discussed or thought about subsequent characters, if they're not in one of those three positions, I'm always thinking, all right, so it's a combat character, but. For example, previous iterations are, previous iterations of Periwinkle, I believe, had different like powers and abilities.
Yeah.
And I saw that anytime my brain is like iterate, it's because of the, Periwinkle either has all of the combat stuff and some cool powers, or it's because he doesn't, it's like some imbalance in my brain.
Yeah, of between the two sides of the spectrum. Yeah.
He is combat, but he's like got awful damage, but a great attack.
Yeah.
And then he's got these powers or something like that. If that makes sense.
Interesting way to think about it.
Yeah, about how the character moves is kind of almost incidental.
Okay. My approach is always narrative, weirdly. Yeah. Like everything that we kind of did was trying to be like, all right, narratively, what does this mean? Yeah. How does this make sense, you know, towards this character as a character?
Mm.
And that's where I was like, right, with Leo, because we'll start with Leo, because I think he was the one that we sort of nailed pretty quickly.
Dude, absolutely. Leo, like, I want to say, you
locked in with Leo.
I think that really helped, is that you were, because obviously you play Leo in the campaign, I think you just played a lot of Leo and sort of figured him out.
Yeah, because it was like, okay, cool, we got to have this guy who's like a little guy, and he's like moving around the board, not taking too much damage, or like avoiding a lot of the damage he could take, because you wanted him, like, I want him to be weak.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, he's an assassin. Yeah. So let's make his health low.
Mm,
and so I think of the starting characters, he's like one of the most weakest in terms of health.
Yeah.
So you're like, let's make him a little bit weaker so that, look, we can set things up so that he's like sneaking around doing some damage. But if he messes up, things can be really bad for him. And then it came down to like a special ability. And I think, I forget initially what they were, and initially like these kind of played around with them. And it was like, well, the special abilities can either be, you know, passive or active. And so we were like, well, let's make him, because he has this magpie familiar in the story, in the campaign. So I was like, all right, well, what makes sense here? So he's walking around the city, but like, oh, maybe his magpie is like swooping around and being like, what's this, something shiny? Let me have a bit of a taste on that.
Yeah.
And it was initially, the items have these like small and large.
Oh, yeah.
And so like initially it was, oh, well, small items only.
That makes
sense. The magpie can't lift it. Yeah. But then I think we started towards the end, lifting restrictions in certain other ways.
Mm.
We were like, well, stuff it.
Yeah,
why not?
Absolutely.
Why restrict yourself to that?
For sure.
Any item that's there as a free action, just grab it. Have some fun with this. And I think that helped locking that
again in. I think one of our biggest, if we have any design philosophy, I think it definitely is like, what is fun, because I think in a weird way sometimes that narrative, I mean not always, but in that instance it's like it restricted us, because it was like, well, a magpie can't pick up a big item, you know what I mean,
look at that magpie,
that's so crazy
for me to hear. It's all numbers for me. I want you to know
I think
it's only ever been numbers for me.
Well, I think I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. I feel like I'm far more holistic about the whole thing, where I'm like, I'm kind of always thinking about the whole game in terms of like just the dance,
between
players and between items, between NPCs, between what you're capable of doing in a turn, but between like this kind of, I feel like I take it much more as a whole and see how everything plays against each other, which is good. It's good to come out of three different sort of philosophies.
100%. Sure.
But yeah, having that idea of like, what's enjoyable? Why are we restricting ourselves? And like another thing, so with that ability, I remember being reluctant early on. I was like, oh, but if Leo can just, because you know that's an anytime ability, you can pick up an item. And I was like, oh, but Leo's going to be picking up so many items that Greg Pierce or Periwinkle aren't.
Yeah.
That feels like it's going to be overpowered. But then, and I remember having this discussion, we were like, oh, everyone needs to be overpowered.
Yeah.
That's how you make the game fun. Everybody is, don't make anyone weak, make everyone too powerful and then pair it back. That's so much easier than starting from this small point and trying to grow.
Yeah. And so then we had So I think Leo, we were like, all right, sweet. Not pretty happy with him. Yeah. Change there. Yeah. Like his skill was quite, I think it was his skill and his like attack were quite balanced. And I think he was a bit more better with skill. And then his attack wasn't as good. But then it's like, well, his whole point is picking up weapons and going around and, Leo and had making a lot of, himself and prepping himself.
That was a lot of,
That was the beauty of the original three for me. Yeah. The beauty of the original three was...
I guess they are spectrums. That spectrum, yeah.
Yeah, I love it so much. Yeah. Out of the box, coming out of the gate, Periwinkle is good at fighting. Yeah. He has the good numbers for fighting, and Greg Pierce has the good numbers for skill.
Yeah.
But...
Leo
didn't have as good at fighting as Periwinkle. He didn't have as good as skill as Greg Pierce, but that extra item made the difference in either case.
Absolutely. And the thing with Leo as well, that a lot of his movement, correct me if I'm wrong, is like it's a damage instead of an attack.
So the hit and run, which is the dash, it's a damage.
It's a base damage. You don't have to make any check or anything.
Fine. Yeah. It just does
which
one little damage.
Periwinkle just doesn't have, you know what I mean?
So it was a little chip damage. Yeah, I think that was the first time we were like, let's like almost like a war of attrition. He's around, and so I was like, all right, cool. So we put him away, we're like, sweet, and he's largely just been that for like the longest time. And then it was Greg Pierce, and for a while, everyone had like four item slots, and it was cool. Eventually, it was like, all right, you can either have four small items or two large items. And initially, you couldn't pick up NPCs,
yes, that's
and
very true.
Then it was kind of like trying to figure out what is Greg Pierce.
Mm.
And it's like, well, he's a bard. He is this like, silver tongue.
Yeah,
he is
this absolutely.
Kind of person who is just like, will always like, I'll cut a deal. I'll do this kind of stuff. He'll be basically robbing Paul to pay Paul.
Yeah. And I think we really wanted because like, this feels like I'm tooting my own horn, but
please.
Everybody loves Greg Pierce. It's true. I mean, all I want, but Greg Pierce is a fan favorite. So
he's a fun character. He's a really good character. It's that moment where it's that, like, because you are, I guess, renowned, Jackson, of a buffoon.
I am a clown.
And
a
buffoon maxing. Yeah.
With Greg Pierce, it was like, it's buffoon, but a locked-in buffoon who he knows what he's doing.
Exactly.
And so it was like you locking in, as it were.
Yeah, and being holy shit. So I think there was this, like, for me at least, I was like, we got to nail Greg Pierce. Greg Pierce needs to be, because people talk about, he's pulling all this amazing shit out of his ass. We need to give him, we need that. He needs to be able to do that in this game, because I can imagine if you're a big fan of D&D Spinoza, you open up the game and Greg Pierce is like boring to play, or it doesn't feel like the Greg Pierce in the story, you might be disappointed. So in my head, I was always like, we have to nail.
So we were like, all right, I think it was you. Like, why can't I just pick up one of the NPCs? I want to pick up a guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, all right. Okay, fine.
Let's try that out.
And so we have like an interact as an action, which is like lets you interact with an NPC, the location, or the item that's on that location. And so I was like, okay, cool. Well, a lot of Greg Pierce's moves, let's have as interacts.
Yeah.
And so we made, again, to be like, all right, let's try and like, not too overpowered. Like, cool. For him, every NPC is going to be small. So we can like, he can fit three NPCs at any one time. In his backpack, as it were. Whereas everyone else, maximum is two. And like, sure, he can't pick up as many big items or as many items, but he can always have as many guys as he needs.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was like, cool, let's give him like three slots in the backpack. And then for his move set, we're like, well, he needs to be slippy.
Yeah,
he needs
absolutely.
To be constantly moving.
Yeah.
And so we had like, I think he's got like, a dash that he can kind of like dash interact, so he can kind of move.
Move, interact with the space, and then move to the next space.
Like,
yeah,
pretty decently, like kind of move around.
Oh,
the
absolutely!
Board
you got
a
move where you interact at the location you're on and then get out of there.
I think,
which is very useful. Yeah.
Those interactions, I think, the plethora of interactions that he gets are. It unlocked kind of like the most Greg Pierce option that exists in the game right now, I think, it was once back with a previous iteration of picking up NPCs. But there was the feeling of, I remember the first time, Jackson, you were playing Greg Pierce and you moved to a space with an interact. There was an enemy there. You knew you were going to take damage and you were like, oh, wait, I can just pick them up.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have the interact. I'm not doing anything with it.
I can just put them in my backpack and then I don't get attacked by them.
Yeah.
And it was
picking up NPCs works a little differently now, but it does still have that kind of that energy.
Yes, absolutely. It definitely has that feeling of like because so you know the way the game works is that if you remain on a location that has a hostile NPC on it, if you're there at the end of the turn, you will take damage from the hostile NPC. But you can instead chuck the sucker in your backpack,
exactly,
and you're okay. You might take a little damage at the beginning, but then, brother, you're home safe.
You used that to just. You didn't even want the NPC. Yeah. You would use it all the time, and all of us would. Anyone who's playing Greg Pierce would use that to just avoid damage.
And it does 100%. A wonderful, and this is extremely, I think there's a real lovely synergy here, where Greg Pierce is annoying to play against because you not only are you picking someone up so you don't have to deal with them, you can just take them off the board.
Yeah.
And the other players that are like, oh, I was really trying to get Papa Littolo, but Jackson just put him back in the NPC deck. Okay. Cool. Awesome.
Loving that.
Literally, I mean, we're still, you know, playtesting some new stuff. We were doing that today. Literally today, as Greg Pierce, I managed to screw you over monumentally. And I haven't played Greg Pierce in a while because we've been experimenting with new characters and stuff like that. So it was very fun to get back into it and be like, oh, Greg Pierce could be a annoying.
it was I think it was like a 1-2 punch of just absolutely ruining my day.
I was like, oh,
you were really having a rough one.
It was like a realization of like, oh wait, Zammit wants this character, but I am in such a position where I can use Greg Pierce's movements to steal him from Zammit.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, while I'm here, I can also take Zammit's sword.
You stole like an item that I was using, and then you got that, and I was like, that really sucks because, well, I needed that for this other thing.
Yeah.
And then you then stole Papa Littolo out from underneath me, and I was like, that also sucks because I was setting that up for this other thing. In one go.
In one go.
You just ruined my day.
And then I need to step to the location next to me and just drop him off, and I got a victory point. It was great.
Beautiful. Felt very good. Thank you so much. I love it. I love this for me. Good. Yay.
Love this game we made together. But yeah, so
like it was just a good little oh yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's Greg Pierce. He's very annoying to play against, but so much fun.
Yeah.
So much fun.
So it was trying to be like, all right, so he doesn't really do a lot of the combat stuff.
No,
so we're trying to be like, all right, cool. So he's picking people up, he's dropping them out, he's grabbing items, he's doing this. Mm. But what I also like about the game that we've made is that, well, if he wanted to, you can still do some combat stuff.
Yeah.
Like you can pick up some items, help him hit, you can pick up some items which when you discard do damage.
Mm.
And so like you can gear yourself up to do little quests that,
again,
like,
you need to do. Literally the game we played when we were playtesting this morning was there was a section where I had that move forward and interact, and on the location that I move forward to interact was some daggers. The way daggers work in the game is that you can discard them to do damage to an NPC. The NPC I needed to kill was there with 2 health. The daggers did two damage, so and it's not an attack, so I don't need to roll my attack. So we just move forward, interact, pick them up, throw them, bada bing, bada boom, quest done. Like, you can still, you know, every player or every player character is competitive in some way.
Yeah.
Across every quest, you just have to think about it.
Yeah, you just have to be clever about it. I was going to say all the combat characters can do the skill based things. They just need to be clever about it.
Exactly.
The skill characters can do the numbers can be balanced.
Exactly. The characters are all individual and have their own individual ways of playing, but the items allow you to kind of play any way you want, which I think is great. I'm very proud of that fact.
Yeah. So with Greg Pierce, that was this idea of, for me, going down the streets and zipping along and like running around and maybe getting a couple of licks in from other people because you've done some terrible things to their wives, and then you're like, well, but at the same time you can get out of it. That's sort of like, you know, he's like the idea of like just running down a street and then just like quickly grabbing something and then just keep going. And the ability of like grabbing something and then just chuffing off at any direction, like, is really nice of having that mobility.
Absolutely.
Of what you could do there, which is where I really like what we did with Greg Pierce. And then moving on to Periwinkle.
Periwinkle was...
Which, little... Ooh,
the problem child.
No.
Not the problem.
Actually, the child of the problem child.
Of the initials.
Yeah, the initials.
Oh, I'm aware of the problem child. Yeah. That was, for me, one of the hardest ones to give up because the numbers felt
good.
I know.
Actually, before we even get... Because again, I think before maybe we even get to Periwinkle, there was the other character that we introduced, which was Claren.
Norman, as
fourth character who was played, I guess, by you, like all the other NPCs.
And whoa, I played every character except three.
Dude, you were busy.
Whoa.
And so Claren Norman was a priestess of Penir.
Mm.
And it was just kind of like a warrior priest.
Yeah, I was going to say sort of a,
So for me, again, this whole idea of like, what are we doing with this person? how are they in the city?
Yeah.
And it was like, right, I want them to be walking down the street and just like marching down the street, as opposed to running, as opposed to slinking, marching down the street. And being able to like cop the damage,
yeah,
and then dish it out. And so initially, and this is when defense was a thing, because everyone was like, I think it was like everyone mostly had like a defense of six,
yeah.
So i.e. on a die, you had to roll six and only six, and if you rolled six, no damage. And so for Clara, we were like, wait, let's make it like a four or five,
yeah, yeah.
And so it was this kind of thing of like, cool. Maybe she's very high in defense. And then she can kind of like, as she's moving along, she can heal herself. Mm. She's doing this. She can take no damage, that kind of stuff. And for a long time, I was like, let's make Clara Norman the Mario.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. We wanted her to be like your beginner character. Yeah. Like which doesn't actually make sense in retrospect because you're not playing by yourself.
No. Yeah.
So even if it's your first time playing, somebody's got to be not someone the else. Beginner character. But but anyway, yeah, yeah, that was our idea. But like, we wanted to be easy to play, basically, you know?
Not like, you know, almost like not too many frills. It was very much hard to like take a lot of damage. So you had, you know, you weren't worried about taking... being defeated or anything like that. It was this kind of thing of like, yeah, you're just there, you're very tanky, and you're plodding along.
Yeah.
And I think I hated playing her the most.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
I just was like, I am slow,
yeah.
I am boring, yeah. I am tanky, nothing. I'm always behind everyone, and I'm doing nothing.
Yeah,
I'm bored and stroppy.
I think it's very interesting because from the description... from the description that you're giving of someone just kind of like marching down the street, I feel like several characters have gone through that iteration. There have been several characters that we've tried to put the and in different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
They've not all played the same. Like Clara was the high defense, but we've had other characters who were like, I'm just slowly making my way through,
for sure.
And I'm doing what I'm doing, but I'm doing it slowly.
And so for Clara, it was like, I am doing what I'm doing, and I'm doing it slowly, but what she was doing wasn't anything.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of, because we were like, oh, let it be like a bit of a jack of all. Like, you know, no one is, she's fine with this and fine with that. She's average at both skill and attack. So, and it was like, sure, we've had other characters that we'll get to, whereas like, yes, they are also plodding along, but they are very, say, for example, we'll get to Knock Knock. But yes, very plodding along, but very violent.
Yeah,
very strong. Violent and very strong.
Plodding along, but leaving like absolute carnage in a way.
I think that's the tricky thing of trying to take a support character and making them interesting to play in a game where it's not actually a team game.
No. Yeah, you're fighting each other the whole time. You are in competition.
And so I was like, okay, this character is very boring.
Yes.
And to me, I'm like, we need something.
Because
it was like, I think it was like a turn and heal, or like, you know, you could move and attack or something. And so it was this idea of like...
She had a lot of move and heal abilities, but the problem was, because we'd given her such high health,
it didn't matter.
Yeah.
You were never losing enough health for the turn and heal. I mean, the beauty of this game, I think, are those like magic moments where you've figured something out where you're like, well, I'm going to take a step here, but I'm going to take three damage. But on this location is something I can use to heal myself. Mm. And because I've got that thing in my pack, like, you know what I mean? You're doing this crazy strategizing or whatever. But Clara would be like, well, I just need to move forward. I guess I heal. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't
move forward, I heal, but I'm already full health.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever. I do this and I take no damage. Yeah, I'm great.
Mm.
And there's an enticing nature to the character who moves slowly but is never really challenged by the world around them.
Yeah.
There's an enticing nature to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. And but for me at least it was this idea of like, but she's not, because she's kind of very a bit beige and like not to be.
Well, she wasn't specialized.
Like, she wasn't specialized. And so it was like, well, she's not good at combat, so sure, like, you know, when it's like, you know, a 1v1 game and it's versing someone who isn't a combat character, okay, well then she's probably gonna and so, but then the moment you had like Periwinkle, who's much better at combat in, or Knock Knock, you were like, well, Clara's always going to come last.
Yeah, and she's gonna be beat out by one of the skill-based characters, and she's gonna be beat out by the combat character.
And so it was, I think, again, once again, Jack, I think it was you. Yeah. That was just like, what if we, her special ability was just like to be able to pick up as a reaction.
Obsessed with picking up people.
You are.
Yeah.
Really are.
Like picking up someone. And again, from like the narrative thing was like, oh, okay, well, like a congregation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because again, she's a warrior priest. Maybe she's trying to get people to.
Another thing that other characters have had.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's one of those things. But it's funny, again, like you're going from the narrative. But I think for me, that was like a holistic thing where I was like, what's a thing that I can't do in the game that I wish I could do?
Yes.
Yeah. And I wish I could just, without having to spend a turn, you know, or a movement, that I could just, in addition, grab someone and chuck them in my backpack. Yeah. I think it's, and, you know, and then that, Clara's probably would be one of my favorite characters to play, with I would say, these days.
Yeah. So with that, I'm like, Clara is now competitive because then she becomes competitive against, say, a Greg Pierce.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even, Greg Pierce, because who's mostly going to be moving and grabbing because now it's like, well, initially when it was just like, you know, those other.
That's
other,
the numbers.
See the numbers, right?
That's the numbers.
Yeah.
And so it was like, cool. You know, Leo, sure, he can dash around and move around and like zip around or whatever, but he's never going to be able to move around and grab a person as much as, like, say, Greg Pierce is. And so it was like, well, to counter Pierce, well, here we have Clara Norman.
Because the thing of Pierce is that you're moving forward. It's part of your movement.
Mm.
You are spending your movement to go somewhere and pick someone up.
Mm.
But Clara, you could go and attack someone. And then also just pick, or, you know, pick up an item and also be like, well, while I'm here, get in the backpack.
That's very interesting. Yeah. I never saw Clara's competition with Greg Pierce. I see Clara's competition with Periwinkle.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
Right. Because Clara doesn't have Periwinkle's combat capability. Mm. She's not as good in a fight as he is.
Yeah.
But she's got that extra edge of I'll pick someone up and then I can do things that you can't do.
Well, again, the beauty of Clara is that theoretically you could be on your way to dropping somebody off, you're also attacking people because you've not used up your movement to pick up an NPC. But like genuinely, I would say Clara probably is maybe my favorite character to play. I really like playing Clara.
Once we got that idea of like, yes, as a free action to pick someone up, that really did change it.
It's crazy. One tiny change, but it just made it so much more competitive and so much more fun to play.
It's the numbers part!
And also combine that when we got rid of the defense as well.
Absolutely.
So it was like, well, you really need something to do for her. And so I was like, okay, cool. So she doesn't have a giant dash. She can't move around the board as well as like Pierce and Leo, but... Well, she's still very much competitive in that, you know, well, while you're off there gallivanting around, you've missed someone over here.
Yeah.
I'm going to grab them and I'm going to go over here and do these kinds
of things.
And well, that's what I liked.
Something we were talking about actually today, again, Adam, you were saying that when the way you tend to play, if you're playing a combat character specifically, I think, is that if you complete a quest, because some quests do require you to defeat X amount of people or X amount of, you know, specific kinds of people, you're like, oh, great, I completed a quest. I didn't even realize. And I think Clara is like that for skill quests or for dropping off quests where you're like, well, I can go do a combat. I can go fight the surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
But if on the way I see someone that's going to be relevant to a location, it's relevant to a quest, I'll just pick them up because it's easy to do.
Mm.
And there's something so much fun about that. There's something fun about seeing a new quest come out and being like, is it a drop-off? All right, I can do it. You know what I mean?
That's funny.
I love that about her. It's fun.
I also kind of like Clara in that regard. Then when we locked off Clara as well, that was like, great, fantastic. She's
great, sorted.
And then... I guess for the four original characters, Periwinkle.
Yeah.
And we're like, sweet. Okay. For me, I'm like, we're going to make this man the Kool-Aid man.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Walls.
Yes.
Once again, here we are with walls.
So
again, as we mentioned last week's episode, we had this mechanic in the game of walls and they were there for the longest time. And they were in there for the longest time to the point we built Periwinkle around them.
Because
we were like, okay, Periwinkle is this, he's a wrecking ball.
He is
going around, he is fast. So he has the dashing abilities say your Pierce or your Leo. He's fast, but he's violent.
So
sure, he is zipping around, but he's also punching.
Because
the whole point with him, we had the B armor and he was just going to town.
Yeah.
And so we're like, okay, cool. Well, let's make some of his movements that he can kind of, literally burst through a wall and come out the other side and just punch someone in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, It felt good.
It felt great to do.
It felt great when you were doing that. So we had that as one of the moves. We had one of the moves, which was like, you know, I think it was like, you know, even just scaling the wall. So you can just be like, well, if there's a wall there, don't worry about it. You just jump over there.
That was
fine.
All the grappling hook did once upon a time. That was all
it's crazy
it did.
To think. I'm pretty sure one of Perry's original moves was smash through two walls, which is funny these days, I think with our current, like, you know, with the what we've learned and our skills, if walls were somehow madly still in the game, I would be like, he should just be able to break through walls. He should not need a movement That's crazy that's how we thought back then, you know what I mean? Mm. That we were like, he needs to smash through two walls, as though theoretically he could smash through one wall and be blocked by the next one. Yeah. Like, that's crazy, but that's, you know.
I think half of that reason is like, you know, when you're writing them a card, and so it was if someone had put a wall on one edge and the wall on the other, but you're like, well, I want him to be able to dash through everything.
Yeah.
So on the card, it'll be like dash through, or break of the wall, break of the wall. And so, like, you're trying to get this idea of, like, yes, what am I visually, like, the visual language that I'm using with symbols, and how can we get that across?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he was, like, full-on wall-based guy.
Made it so hard to get rid of walls.
His special ability, I think, as a passive was, like, at the start of the game.
He gets
an extra wall.
You can put in an extra wall.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, you love wall. Perry love wall Perry, so
how good
much.
Is wall?
You love wall,
and we did talk about this a bit last time, but it's so hard when what you've this established foundation of walls, you've built a character on walls, and the gameplay is starting to build around the idea of walls, and somebody says, hey, walls don't work.
Why are you doing this?
You know in your heart they're right, but you're like, if we get rid of walls, we have to change Perry. If we change Perry, that means it feels like a step backwards.
Yeah. And that's so much... You could move through the walls that you placed, do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Your walls were possible for you, but for no one else, except obviously Perry. We'd constructed that existed because when Perry was the only one who could move through walls, why would you put walls places?
Yeah, exactly.
You had a wall to place at the start of the game, but why are you doing that?
Like, why would you make this game harder for yourself? Yeah, we talked about it last week. It was like, Alex was like, why would you make this harder for yourself? And
good point.
It's funny.
I guess this was good. It was harder for us, maybe. It made this like a neat... thing, I guess.
Just like a phone. It seemed like such a genius.
God, thing. I hope there's nothing like that left in the game right now. We put it in because it's funny. God, I hope so.
And so, so then it was like, yes, you could move through your own walls. And then it became, well, Perry's less special.
Yeah, exactly. Because Perry can't move through walls.
So I don't know.
So we had to just scale him back and make him a combat character, which is kind of what he was initially, but we had to really emphasize that. Yeah. And then I think that led to another mechanic that exists in the game now. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was Perry that led to this, where some NPCs had to become notable NPCs. That defeating them outside of a quest would still net you victory points, or prestige points.
Yeah. Because if, like, well, if, you know, what's the point of defeating them? And, like, the way it works is you have quests that are active at all times, and some of those are either delivering a quest.
It's just so random, you never know what you're going
to
get. Yeah.
Delivering an item to an NPC, delivering an NPC to a location, or item to location, or it's defeating... someone or some
might be
people.
Defeat three town guards, defeat four hostile enemies or something like that,
and then it was like, well, what happens if they aren't active? What's buried?
Perry is so heavily weighted in this direction that without those quests, and again, I think this was at the beginning as well, where you know you might not have that many quests on the board, because I think this was before we decided on the number of players plus one is the amount of quests that you have.
Yeah, I think this was when you were sharing quests with the other person.
So you could be locked in to two quests that you could theorize. And again, this was also before we'd added the kind of balancing with the items where you could, again, it would still be pretty hard for Perry, but like at least these days, maybe he could make it competitive.
Mm. Yeah.
But back then, it was like, it's just not happening for you. So we were like, okay, well, what if just some NPCs are very difficult to defeat, but they are worth a certain small amount of prestige? So theoretically, you actually have another way of playing the game.
Yeah.
You could play the game by beating the quests, but you could also play the game by just fighting enemies.
And can I say, the numbers feel good on that.
They do. I agree.
The numbers feel incredible.
And don't get me wrong, adding this presented a whole, you know, bevy of brand new problems.
Yeah.
But it certainly... I think it was a necessary step, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Like, again, it was this this idea of, like, well, this is the thing, and then that really kind of governed how we then did a lot of the other decision making. And it was just kind of like, all right, these are notable NPCs, so they have to be worth, you know, some points, like 1, 2, or 3, depending what they are, who they are, and how difficult they are. And then it was like, well, if we're adding quests that, you know, or that are in the game that maybe you use to then also defeat these characters.
For example, if it's like defeat 3 hostile NPCs, the surgeon, who is worth 1 prestige point, is a hostile NPC.
Yeah.
So if you defeat the surgeon, you are getting
like 3 points. Yeah, so it's like one of those things where it's like, okay, cool. So like, you know, I think he's like, we use a surgeon because I think he's worth 3.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, when that comes up on as a quest to defeat the surgeon, and it's like, it's a hard quest to do in the sense that if you're not already geared for it because he does a lot of damage, so if you miss, oh no.
Yeah, it's bad.
You know, he's already worth a good amount of points. And then if that quest is also worth a good amount of points, well, then you're just getting too many things.
Yeah, exactly. And like, too much.
So I was like, okay, we'll need to balance that out as well.
I definitely remember many, like, you know, test games, much where somebody would be like, I'm going full barbarian.
Yeah, I remember almost full-on spreadsheets of each quest individually, how a breakdown of how many things you need to do and how hard each of those things are.
And then how does that, you know, what in victory points, what does that mean?
I think, it again, we'll get to the problem child in a second.
Yeah.
But it was this question of, like, say, for example, you are fighting a person who is worth, say, 3 prestige.
Yeah.
And then it was like, you as Greg Pierce are doing 3 separate quests to get 3 prestige.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how quickly can you do these 3 quests versus, without picking anything up, this problem child of ours?
Yes, yeah.
How can they just defeat that notable NPC without picking up a single item?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was like, okay, oh yeah, well.
Oh no.
What a problem child you've become.
Yeah.
But getting back to Perry, so when we got rid of Walls, we were like, right, we're kind of back to square one. But we liked his movement in a sense of like, well, you know, we like that he's still a violent character. Yeah. We like that he's zipping around.
He's the one designed for combat.
He is still a wrecking ball. Yeah. And for that, we do need that speed. We do need that ability to keep going. And we do need that ability of like, right, he's a bit tanky. And so like, okay, well, what else is he? Well, he's town guard. And so it's like, well, that's basically a cop. So why don't we just kind of lean into this, you know, violent cop man?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like, well, what can we do here? And so instead of like, you know, the just running through walls, well, what if we have like a hello, hello, what do we have here? You know, what's let me have a quick inspection of this kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, cool. Then he can kind of maybe left or right and he can interact.
Yeah, yeah.
And at least that makes him, you know, being able to pick up items or NPCs.
Especially, I mean, that just helps with the action economy of the game because you need to spend an action to pick up. And so we used to, the way it used to work is you would be like, I turn left, and then you would be on the location so that on your next turn, you could pick up the item.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, sometimes still depending on your movement, that might be how it shakes out, but we tried to make it so that you're doing something interesting on every turn.
Yeah.
Whether that's fighting someone, whether that's looking at using the location, like whatever it was. So it was like, well, now you're, you know, in the action economy, Perry can turn left and get a sword rather than, you know, waste half of the round setting up to pick up a sword to then later on down the track, like, you know.
Yeah. So it was like, okay, so we can like, oh, maybe he's inspecting something. He's looking for clues, as it were. So he's still that kind of, you know, detective like training, as it were. But then he's like, well, what if he's, you know, hot pursuit? So he's like, you know, chasing down, you know, someone that he's trying to like, you know, nick as opposed to like, you know, wrecking ball going through walls. And then it was like, okay, he's a big orc or half orc kind of character and kind of using, I think, what we did with Greg Pierce, where it was like, well, limit him to only 3 item slots. Let's do the same thing with Perry, but make it items. So for Perry, all items are small.
Yeah. I love that. That's
such a simple decision.
Yeah. And it was like
such a game changer.
And it was this nice made
Perry,
idea of
it makes Perry feel great. Yeah.
And so there's a lot of this game, which was like kind of trying to mirror like certain abilities and other kind of characters with each other. I think like a lot of the NPCs are basically, you know, the hostile version and then the good,
the friendly version.
And they're sort of mirrored in their stats. And so there was a little bit of like mirroring there to be like, well, he's sort of like, he's like pissed but violent. So, okay, let's do that. All right. Okay. So he's picking up items and it could be like, you know, so he can carry 3 very large swords.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
And but then we sort of, I think we balance that out by he just doesn't have as many interacts. Greg Pierce, as he moves through the board in a round, could theoretically fill up, like in 3 moves, could fill up his backpack. But Perry, because he's more limited on interacts, he's not going to, you know, and this is the kind of like the minutiae that you end up kind of agonizing over for hours, but he can gear himself up decently, but it will take him, you know, longer than it might take Piss to gear himself up for Piss quests, if you know what I mean.
Piss quests.
Yeah.
I love the, but the numbers feel good. At the end of collecting the items, he's the quality of items he has is way better than Greg Piss.
Oh, big time.
But he's taking longer to get them. Go on.
I was going to say, and with him collecting the items, this was like the very first time we were like, cool, he's picking up so many items that he cannot miss. Perry can't miss.
I remember Perry cannot miss.
So, the way this works, you roll the dice, and if you can get your target number or higher, you hit it. But then if you get your target number to one and higher, well, you never miss. Yeah, so why am I rolling?
Exactly. I need to roll.
And so it was like, well, I go there, because I'm moving and attacking. I move forward and I attack. I'm not able to roll, and I'm doing so much damage. Boom, dead. Yeah. Off I go.
I remember the specific game where this became a problem.
Yeah.
And I remember we got to the end and we were like, whoa, you were killing it. You were doing so good. And you're like, yeah, it wasn't fun.
Yeah. No, I didn't. Yeah. Not fun at all. It became boring.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well, then that's why we implemented that. Well, look, hey, a one is a critical fail. You fail no matter what. No matter how good you are.
Yeah. No matter what your stats are showing. Yeah.
It's a little Susan of D&D.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. A little bit of flavor, D&D flavor in the gumbo.
I like that. So I'm like, all right, cool. Let's do that.
I genuinely so much love hearing you talk about, oh, yeah, the movement cards make you feel like this.
Yeah.
Every movement card has an imaginary number attached to it to me. And every time I'm thinking about the movement cards, I'm like, do the numbers add up to the same amount?
That's so interesting.
That is very interesting.
I don't care what does what. So long as the numbers make rough approximate sense.
Interesting.
I think it's so valuable for us to all come at it with that completely different, because there are definitely flaws to each way of looking at the game. Yeah. other than Adams.
The numbers don't lie. The imaginary numbers I made up in my head and I couldn't tell you because the numbers aren't real and I don't actually have a number. But they're, that's maths.
Yeah.
It's mathematics.
Yeah.
So we had Perry to be like, well, cool. He's very similar to Piss in that, hey, all weapons or all items. I think initially it was all weapons. Small, not all items. And then the same thing happened where we're like, why are we restricting ourselves?
Yeah, exactly. Why not
give him? Have this fun.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
It's like, keep it going. Like, why stop that?
Absolutely.
And so that's where we'd like, sweet. Well, now they all feel different.
Mm.
You know, it's like Clara still feels like she's marching down the street. But she's like marching down, being like, "Oi, you!
Yeah.
Let me talk to you about Penia. Get in,
for sure."
Piss is there, being like, "Whoop!"
Yeah.
Just doing a big run, and then Leo is just there slinking around, being like, oh, "Over here is going to do big damage to me. What if I did? What if it didn't?
What if I just avoided it all?
Here we go." And then Perry felt like he was running around and just like punching people right in the face,
breaking heads.
He feels like an action hero when you're playing Perry.
Perry Wickle feels like you're like, who's that over there? Yeah. As they're like huffing towards you.
Bam!
Oh,
punched in the face.
It's big, what's his name from Die Hard? It's big.
John McClane.
John McClane energy. Of he's the put upon action hero and he doesn't have the skills necessarily to do everything. He doesn't necessarily have the skills to take down the surgeon on his own or anything like that, but he's going to wrap some bandages around his feet because he crawled through grass. Glass. He's going to steal. Ho, ho, ho. I have a machine gun now.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's going to figure
it
out.
And he rolls in, geared up, and demolishes. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so those are the four characters that we pretty much like spent a lot of time developing to kind of like really get the feel right.
Mm.
And then comes Knock Knock.
Yeah.
Which was not even called Knock Knock in the campaign.
No, in the campaign we say Knock Knock so briefly. Like, she has so many, because, whatever, a D&D game, especially back then.
Very improv-y.
It's very improv-y, and it takes place over multiple sessions, so you forget shit. But she's called Knock Knock,
Grok, Grok, Grok.
Whether it's the grandpa orc or the grandma orc, gets confused quite a few times.
Yeah.
But we settled on, for the board game, Knock Knock. We were like, what a fun character for Perry's grandma. You can play as Perry's grandma. Great. Or Perry's mom, I forget what it is. But anyway.
Perry's mom, the kids' grandma.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
But brother, when I tell you Knock Knock destroyed us.
The bane of this company.
You know, I think, again, we said it last episode, but Dammit was right. We had in the Slack, like, the knock-knock problem. Yeah,
what do we do with a problem like knock-knock?
Yeah.
So the biggest problem, and the biggest problem...
And the sweetest number.
And the sweetest number. So everyone starts with the base number, or like the base damage you do is one.
Yeah, and some so then items like, that you pick up will add to your damage and make, you can stack them,
The knock-knock? Let's make her powerful, a big angry grandmama orc. Let's make her base two.
You know, and because a lot of that initial figuring out the different characters is like, well, if Perry has a high, you know, high attack, then that's like something we have to mess with. Or it's somebody over there, they can have a high skill, or they can have a high defense, they can have high health. And this is just was not something that at this point we had messed around with. So we were like, well, there's a parameter to change to make the character feel different.
So we're like, okay, we're going to make her like a, in the campaign, it's like, you know, I think it happens off camera, as it were.
Yes.
But like, you know, she's just like an old, like, you know, battle-worn orc. You know, that has retired, but she's still got a lot of fight in her. So we're like, let's just make her extremely violent and extremely slow.
Slow and deadly.
I believe in from memory, it was the balance, the way the numbers work is she starts with the two damage, but she had a really hard to hit roll.
Yes, absolutely.
So she's like hard to hit, was slow. And she had trouble turning.
Yes.
I don't think we gave her a reverse.
And that was intentional because we were, that was the trying to get the flavor of the and, you know, being like, okay, so she just keeps moving, marching stolidly forward.
Yeah.
And she can,
if she wants to get like behind, like, oh, I forgot something. You got to do like a right.
You're an old woman. Left, you got to.
And then you're like, well, I got no more right.
Okay, I'll wait till the next day.
Tomorrow I'll do it.
We were talking about this earlier. Did she begin with no left turn?
I honestly think it was no reverse.
Yeah. No reverse. Okay.
Yeah.
Because that kind of equivalent, this
that does
equivalent
sound familiar.
The same thing.
Yeah.
Which is, and again, that's the vibe is right.
Yeah.
But god damn, was it annoying.
It was.
Nevertheless, because she did two damage, we started to notice a trend.
Yes.
And the trend was that Knock Knock was winning every single...
And not just winning, decimating.
Yeah, she was demolishing the competition.
Absolutely demolishing. Because it wasn't just the two damage that she was doing. She was also had a lovely ability, which was once per day, like a thorn ability.
Yeah.
If someone attacks you, we used to do one damage.
Absolutely. And she also had a movement card, which was you don't move. Yeah. You stay in the where whatever location you're on, but your attack has an extra damage, and that meant you could stack it horrendously.
Yes. And I don't think it was like in like it wasn't even a you just do one more damage for that turn.
Mm.
It was you do one more damage for the rest of that day.
For the rest of the day, so, he's right. So, God damn it, he's right.
That number sounds so good.
So if you look in pure math.
Yeah,
In pure math of like one person is going to sit on one square as you start off, and I'm going to start wailing away at somebody. On day one, I can do maximum 4 damage.
Yeah.
Knock Knock can do, 3, 6, 9, 10 damage.
Yep.
In one day.
But I love that too much.
This is both the narratively the old woman can't move anywhere, and the numbers give her as many numbers as humanly possible.
A 2 number 4 damage is her good at combat.
It felt good. It felt so good giving you that 2, and it was the hardest thing in the world to give off.
And then also because we're the world's smartest, cleverest, handsomest boys,
we figured it out, man. We're smart enough for that.
We also gave her a lot of, like high health.
Yeah.
So because she's like, well, she's stocky.
Yeah, she's stocky.
She's stocky.
Yeah.
So she's tanky.
And she's dangerous. And we were like, this is balanced out by the fact that she's so annoying to move.
No, not at all. Because there's a reason why glass cannon is so prevalent.
Yeah,
in a
exactly.
Lot of, like,
exactly.
That's video games. We did forget the rule.
We made a lead cannon.
The rule that we learned really early on was you make them too powerful, then you pair them back. And we did make her too powerful, but we tried to add the pairing back as we were doing
absolutely.
Which is not what we should have done.
No, I agree. Absolutely.
And so there was so much of like, okay, well, first off, like playing Knock Knock, does it feel good?
Yeah, is it fun?
Initially, when it was like, you can't move everywhere, like, no, I hate it. I hate that I can't move anywhere. I hate that it just takes me so long to get to, like, you know, to reverse or to do it. Like, sure, I'm stocky. Sure, I'm like, you know, can do some damage.
Yeah.
But my movement sucks. Like, fair enough. Let's figure out movement. So we figured out movement a bit more. more, so it gave her a bit more mobility.
Yeah.
And then like, okay, so Knock Knock can finally move around the board, and oh god, she can move around
someone
the board.
Get her. Someone can
stop this woman.
Someone capture Knock Knock.
And like letting a rabid dog out.
Yeah.
Now this will solve our problem.
and the problem again, and we talked about this last time, is because there is so much, every game you play is different because the board is randomized, the items are randomized, mm-hmm. the NPCs, the quest, all of this is randomized. And so it makes it very difficult to find patterns. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's
still,
you know, like something with the new characters we're developing. Occasionally we run into this problem as well. But what it meant is that, and also, it feels good to win.
Yeah.
So that's the problem.
If you're playing as Knock Knock and you keep winning, some part of you wants to be like, well,
she's perfect, really.
Thumbs up. She's good.
I guess I'm just a really good player. I don't know. Yeah, like Knock
Knock
rule.
What problem?
Especially like when I played it like for the first time with like cousin-in-law when they were down. They were never very, like, you know, they never really played a lot of board games. Mm. And not only did she win, she lapped us. Like it was just...
Oh,
like,
I remember that.
It was an insane thing. And I'm like,
we need to fix Knock Knock. We need to figure something else.
And part of you is just like, but she just did real good rolls.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There's a lot of RNG. She was just lucky with the way the quests fell. Lucky with where the NPCs were.
It feels like a pointed attack is happening right now. On account of a certain playtest we did earlier today and a certain thing I said during that playtest.
But like, you know, it's like, yeah, whatever. It's like, so Knock Knock is fine. Like, it was just a luck of the draw. That's why there's like, but like, it was just, okay. So the problem when you have every character doing one.
Yeah.
And then the next character does 2 damage. It's an increase in like 100%.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're dealing with small integers, and then you go from 1 to 2. Okay, that's a lot.
That's huge. So, the difference is massive.
It's like the difference between, say, if I do 10 damage and someone does 15, you're like, okay, cool. It's like it's a
50%.
It's a 0.5. You know, not too bad. But going from 1 to 2,
And then this is kind of similar to the Perry a wall problem as well, where it was like, well, but if we get rid of that, what is special about her? And so instead of getting rid of that extra damage, we designed a bunch of stuff around trying to make, instead of just being like, okay, we just have to accept it.
There's no way we can reduce her damage?
Yeah,
no,
we were so reluctant.
There was so much time to be like, look, I do feel that the solution is going to be making her damage 1.
I remember being, I was so against that.
We were all, I think we could see it on the horizon as where things were going to go, but we were like, can we change her movement? What if we get rid of, because, you know, she had that thorn ability.
Yeah.
What if we, you know.
Yeah, we went through the stages of grief.
Yeah, we did.
Because it was like, denial, she's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And then we was like,
this is good, maybe.
And they were like, what if we just like, you know, what if we got her less healthy? This is the bargaining. We're like, okay.
She's weak now. She's doing heaps of damage, but she's weak.
Anger.
I'll kill you. I understand you want to reduce her from 2 to 1, but I just, well, if we do that, I'm going to smack you in the mouth.
If you do that, for some reason, you'll wreck my life.
Depression. You know? We're going to make her 1 damage, aren't we?
And then we went to depression of like, hey, even with reduced health, she still decimates. The problem here is, even with reduced health, when you fight someone, they don't, and you defeat them, they can't fight back because they're dead.
You did it.
Yeah.
Baby,
they've been defeated.
You wake up in the middle of the night screaming, what's wrong? I think we're going to have to reduce her damage to 1.
And then you're like,
what? Who are you talking about?
And so then depression kicks in of like, I guess you got to be like,
suppose you're going to do it.
Because that's the thing. Like, the thing that made her so different and special was that, like, she's so powerful off the bat. Mm. And then
the number feels.
Number feels good.
Yeah, number feels good.
And then, you have this like, I guess
because not only it's not actually it's, the trick is it's not as simple as like now she does 1 damage. The trick is, okay, so now that Knock Knock does 1 damage, we've got to come in and figure out something
what
new
else?
How we've got to hope that new thing we come up with is not also unbalanced. And then we're gonna have to, you know what I mean,
so it's back to square 1 essentially.
And that's just a horrible thing to do, but you don't want to
and then which leads you to acceptance of being like, okay, she's now does one damage, but how can we at least make her still feel powerful?
Yeah.
And so, like, look, she's still slow. She, again, doesn't have the dash that, you know, the others have, but she is powerful in her own right. So, like, you know, I think it's, okay, rather than having Link, I think it was, like, the reflection was, like, every time she got hit.
Yes,
It was even just once a day.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, let's remove that and let's have it, you know, once a day she can just be like, ah, clap back.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was like, okay, let's have her ability to be, like, one of her movement cards. So, like, okay, we'll still make her slow. She can't move from the location she's in. So she has to go somewhere, cop a bit of damage if she's going to, like, you know, or if they're hostile, and then be like, okay, it's a plus one attack to this turn.
Yeah,
so then if you do actually do, you know, you land that hit, because you still might not, you know, you still land that hit, sweet. You do some more damage.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, she's left and right and she can do some damage.
Yeah.
And she attacks. So it's like, okay, she's still attacking damage.
Tough, she's still tough. Doing that damage.
Did we experiment briefly? I feel like I have a vague memory of this. The card was like plus one damage for the rest of the day, but you do nothing this turn.
I think, potentially. Yeah. I think that was one of those things where then we had to be like...
It was a very brief iteration.
We were like, but it's not... You're not doing anything. Yeah, you don't do anything. So it's not fun. And even, I think that do damage on the location, it's in the perfect sweet spot somehow where you're still attacking, so it still feels good. But you aren't moving, you know what I mean? So there is still some, like, restriction to it. But
the numbers in my head make sense with an interact, picking up an item, feels the same as dealing one point of damage.
100%, for sure.
And so, that kind of was like, okay. We've sort of fixed the problem of Knock Knock.
Yeah.
And it was just like, she had to be nerfed quite a lot.
Massively.
And she's still a very powerful character.
Yeah, I mean, Adam was playing her, again, in the mythical playtest we keep referencing, and he won by a significant margin.
I rolled a lot of successes.
We're back to
No, I don't think so. I think, if anything, we need to increase her damage to 2.
We're back, baby.
We'll just make it hard for her to hit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Fix that problem.
Lock in. Sounds good.
That was kind of those initial characters. And I think it comes down to, like, right, how do we make these people, for at least for me, it was, how do we make these people feel different?
Yes.
It was this kind of like, you know, it was the mouth feel, but for playing.
Yeah, well, 100%. You know, it's that thing where we committed very early on to having this kind of sort of semi-asymmetrical type of gameplay where every player played differently and was weighted to different sort of ways of playing the game. But to do that, you need to make them feel unique. You know, you need to, when you're playing Greg Piss, needs to feel very different to playing Leo or playing Perry, but they all need to coexist in the same board game. So, you know, it's kind of like an immensely difficult job. And it means a lot of sitting down and balancing and being like, you know, but then also because it's so unscientific, you finish and you go, did that feel good?
Did that feel good? Was that nice?
You know, and that's, for me, it always feels like you kind of, this is probably a very wanky metaphor, but like you have the block of clay and it's already in there what you need to get. You just got to chip away until there it is. It's kind of how it feels for me. I don't know.
You get rid of all that other crap.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's in there.
And you can see glints of it. You're like, oh, that's kind of how Perry should play. Hang on a second. Oh, there, it's been in front of me the whole time, you know. Yeah.
It's a bit complicated though, because with the, we need the standard setup, you know? The standard, you put the things in, like, you know how there's like a standard cup of tea that they brew.
I know what you mean. Yes.
Yeah, it's not actually, there's no actual standard cup of tea.
Standard kilo?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, that is, a, anyway.
Anyway.
Yeah, we need like a, we need a standard setup that we can measure all of the characters against. And I had a point.
Oh, yeah.
But then you distracted me with your kilo.
So sorry, Adam.
But yeah, it's, yes, I remember.
Yeah.
So it's with your clay metaphor.
Yeah.
It's like you're trying to hew away the different parts to find the statue underneath. But the clay, because the board is ever changing.
Yeah.
The clay keeps moving and regrowing
it's shifting,
itself.
Absolutely.
You'll see a part of Periwinkle, how it's supposed to look, and then you'll start digging at the clay, but that part will kind of zoom back in.
For sure.
As the board changes on the next playthrough.
And also it's this thing that, you know, so you're like, we got to balance Perry. But you don't just have to balance Perry against the game, you have to balance Perry against Greg Piss. You have to balance Perry against Leo Shadow. You need to get against Knock Knock. What if the game is Greg Pierce and Perry and Knock Knock. That's a completely different game to a game that is Leo Shadow, Greg Pierce, and Knock Knock. Like, it's
like how you're talking earlier with Clara Norman, where Clara is not fun to play in certain setups.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think she's still fun to play, but like...
No, I mean, back in...
You're back in the day. Adam, you got to talk good about the game.
Adam, I like playing Clara. We're selling the game, dude.
And I hate it. No, I mean, what you were saying before about
earlier.
Before
we'd done stuff with her, you were like, well, sometimes she's okay.
Yeah.
If she's, because she can do the combat stuff that Leo and Greg Pierce aren't necessarily weighted towards. So in those games, you're doing all the combat stuff, so you're getting the points. But if you're coming up against, yeah, I see what you mean. You're coming up against like Perry or Knock Knock. You're like, oh, well, I'm significantly, you know, worse at this than them.
I feel like that's something that was, it's kind of like something that we're still grappling with as well, because we've had characters subsequently who were like, oh, this character's only good with this sort of setup, with these sort of characters to bounce off.
Absolutely. I mean, that's still the development stuff of these new characters, of being like, okay, well, how do they play against, okay, you know, oh, this character is fun, I think we've got it, but we should do it again with a completely different setup to see if it still works, if it's still fun, if it's still enjoyable.
Yeah, so I think adapting them, the characters that we had, it was this interesting journey of, like, say, the three player characters, like of Perry, Leo, and Pierce, of like, well, we had a lot of framework.
Yeah.
And so we were like, okay, so we sort of know a lot more in depth about them. But then the other ones that we sort of had to then develop, of like Clara and Knock Knock, and then some of the other ones that we're sort of developing like now or have already sort of done, which we'll probably do another episode of, like, hey, part two.
Yeah, for sure.
There was kind of like, they were either a, they weren't throwaway characters, but they were like characters who were support characters.
They didn't get as much screen time.
Sure, like, and so you kind of have to hang a lot off just their kind of general vibe.
Yeah.
And so you're like, okay, yeah, warrior priest, what does that mean?
For sure.
Hey, angry grandma or orc grandma, what does that mean?
And then so, it's that thing as well, and it's again, like the different ways we approach it. For me, I'm like, what's not in the game? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like what is there to do that we're not doing that this character could do?
Yeah.
You know, and then it's, I think, but that's tricky as well, because then you don't know what you can't do until, I don't know. Like,
yeah, I think I see a very similar thing. Mm. Once again, though, like manipulating those numbers or whatever, where I'm like, well, we've got this bar graph of the different numbers. We've got this bar graph of the different numbers. Now let's try. It's imagining all of them as different. Every little thing, like every different move, their attack, their damage, their hit points. Imagining all of them as little bars, and I'm like trying to rearrange,
manipulating them, and
into a new pattern. Yeah, I just don't. I'm just not thinking about the story.
Yeah,
that's very funny.
Yeah.
So, like, I think for this example, I guess, we're making these like extra characters for like a deluxe edition.
Yeah.
And so the other day we were tooling around with Ralph Moroni. Who is the leader of the Blood Cultists.
Such a funny name for a leader of a Blood Cultists.
I think it's funny that there's Buster Keaton and Damian Eaton.
Yeah.
Every time I see that they rhyme, I'm like, that's funny that they rhyme. Go on.
So with this this character we were developing, and it was like, it's already gone through, I think, three big changes.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so initially it was this kind of like, well, he's a part of the Blood Cult. And so he's the leader of the Blood Cult. And so I was like, well, what if we make him a bit like a warlocker, kind of like a vampire?
Yeah.
And so he's like, every time he's like, let's make him kind of weak, so he's got like a lot, like doesn't have that much health. Mm. And he's like, but every time he defeats somebody, he like sucks off their
He gets some power back.
Sucks
he gets
some them health. Yeah,
gets that health back.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah, okay, cool. And like, I was like, okay, cool. So the way you do the movement is like, you know, you put the movement cards down and you're in your you plan it during the day.
Mm.
Or before the day starts, and then you kind of flip them over.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what if he had this idea of like, well, because he's so sneaky, he plays it from his hand.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, boring. That moment of planning, it sucked for you.
I actually wanted to try that.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, it sucked.
Because, and it's this funny thing to realize, because the game is so established, you're like, the game is designed for me to pre-plan my movement.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, most of the time, you are deciding what you're not improvising on the spot necessarily, or if you are, it's not something you could have ever predicted. Like,
was that an idea, a holdover from when there was more competitive player v player sort of stuff? Because I could imagine being able to play from your hand being not necessarily because you don't want players to know what you're plotting, but because you're kind of anticipating, expecting to have something, to have to kind of work on the fly of, oh, I've not got this character anymore, but I can still, I could still do this instead.
Yeah.
And that kind of helps that.
It just didn't come up. It was weird.
Oh, I'm saying, did we think of that back when there was
that was definitely one of the options we had, one of the versions. And funnily enough, people would play it and be like, I want to play from my hand. Mm. Like, that was a thing that people wanted. And, you know, we said this in the first episode where you got to sometimes allow those desire parts and be like, well, that's what you really want to do in this game, so I'm not going to restrict you. And then other times you got to be like, hey, pal, you don't know what you're talking about.
We're putting this bench next to this bin.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't just hop onto
the bench.
Stop
wrecking the garden.
Go around the bin.
Yeah. The line I've always heard is the general public is right about what is annoying them, but they're wrong about how to fix it. line I've always heard.
I think that was the initially when we had like move forward, move left, move right, move back, and you had no other thing. So a lot of people wanted to do move forward and then do a thing.
And that was,
I think, that was the solution we came up with. It was like, well, then we'll have the move forward interact.
Sort of solve the problem.
And so it was like playing from your hand, and then you had like one movement card, which was mimic.
Mm.
And this idea of it's a blank card, you can play it, you know, and then this kept in there from like the next iteration, which was like, no, you pre-plan because like you are just sitting there being like, so it's a mimic card, which is like, hey, cool. Maybe he's like duplicitous.
Mm.
He can be like a bit sneaky of like, what did you do? I want to do that. And so this idea of like, well, at any time you can use that from your hand and instead of the card you use.
You mimic somebody else's movement.
Which was great if you were playing with like a large pool of characters, a large pool of players who were then doing things that you wanted. Otherwise you were like, well, that would have been useful, but you haven't done anything I want, you son of a... Okay, fine.
Absolutely.
And so it was a bit so it was just never used. So there was like one of his, you know, two extra bonus
cards. Yeah, kind of one that you just never touched.
And the other one. And then the next one was like, sure, he's got low health, but then it was like, you know, you do damage to yourself and then you move forward and attack and deal the damage you dealt.
Yeah.
But like a lot of characters, you know, because he could do like 5 damage...
That would kill a lot of NPCs.
And then he gets like, you know, I think initially it was like either like you get the health you did.
Yeah.
Like
he could never die. It was kind of boring.
And so then we had this other kind of iteration where I was like, what about if we played around with like, you know, garroting or something? And then it was just like a lot of back and forth the other day with you, Jack, where it was you were like, I don't like this because it's passive.
Well, it took me a long time to realize that, too. I was like, something about this just rubs me the wrong way. I don't know, this idea. Basically, the idea was that you can pick up an NPC, have them in like a special slot in your backpack, and slowly, over the course of playing, they will take like tick damage until they eventually die. Which I like visually, and I get the idea of it, but I was like, something about this just kind of annoys me. And then I was like, oh, it's because I'm not doing anything. It's just happening to the side. And that just for my brain, just from like a personal perspective, I'm like, it's just not for me very fun. Mm. Yeah.
And so this back and forth, I think it was a lot of fun for me to be like, okay, what don't you like about this?
Yeah,
And it was just kind of like, okay, because I'm coming from a narrative point of being like, well, it's kind of like a poison damage
Like
most RPG
And I was like, I get that, but something about it just... Okay.
And then it was this active thing. And then there was this other
numbers,
thing.
Jack.
Yeah.
And then we were like, this thing. And then you were like, oh, I don't like that either. I'm like, but that's active. I don't know why. I'm like, pick a lane. And so then it was just kind of like, you know, back and forth to eventually like, well, all right, let's just pair it back. What is he?
Yeah.
What is he doing? What does he like to do? And then it was just kind of like, well, because he was another issue of like, what if we did like a lot of damage but had low health? We went back. We learned nothing from Knock.
That's not for us.
And so then it was like, well, what if he's doing more damage the weaker he gets?
He's
getting like the blood is being drained from him in a sense, but that's when he's most violent. And so I was like, okay, cool. Well, we'll do that. And then we can mix that with, you know, and like this other thing of like, well, what if he's like a strike from the shadow kind of guy? He's kind of like that Leo, but a lot more risky. So what if we sort of started doing these kind of things? And so we kind of eventually was like, all right, cool. Well, like both in terms of, you know, hey, this is, we're active, we're doing something.
It's an active thing that's occurring.
But we're also, for me at least, hey, it's narrative. It's like we're narratively doing this. And so like, hopefully, like, you know, we'll, like, I'm sure when, once we play test that, we're like,
I mean, this is the current iteration of Ralph Moroni.
Who knows
what it's going to look like.
Absolutely.
Three iterations down the track. But we did reach some kind of conclusion.
I think there's some good numbers in the less health he has, the more damage.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've got the numbers. There's something that it works there, but it's a...
It's very funny because that whole concept of that is also like it's grabbing it from another character that we then change completely. Because it was another like a character like a Penia, which is like a sun god.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, what if they were more powerful during like, you know, the morning phase. Yeah. So as not evening comes, they become weaker.
Mm.
And so, but that was not very fun to do.
Yeah.
And so then it kind of
became... That character, the one you're talking about right now, are we allowed to name them?
Oh, like, so, well, I was
I don't want to dox them.
Well, Buster Keaton. And so it was just kind of like, okay, but it wasn't very fun to play.
Yeah.
And so then it, because it became like, oh, you had to kind of set everything up the day before and And so it is this weird thing where you kind of, you know, stuff that worked or didn't work for one character.
You're like, maybe it'll work for someone else.
It'll work over here.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what happened with Ralph, because we were messing around with Buster.
Mm.
And it was like, well, what if we did this? I think it was like basically you're putting blood marks down.
Yeah.
And then you can be able to like move back to that location.
Yeah.
And I think we were using that for Buster, in a weird way. Of like, you know,
you're placing tokens on the board.
He's a bit of a magician kind of thing. So what if he had this, like, you know, teleport spell? Mm. And as he was moving around, he was doing this. And as we were doing this, I'm like, that sounds more like your blood cult. Being able to either make a dark ritual or, like, you know, I'm using the sewer access to kind of move around down the city. And so from that, that just kind of burst narratively a little bit more of, like, what Ralph Moroni can do, which then kind of impacted like the other things that he does.
Well, because I think we've reached this funny place with, you know, iterating on the game and making these new characters. Now that Perry, Leo, Piss, Clara, Knock Knock, they were created at the same time as the game.
Yeah.
So just as we were figuring out Clara and Perry, we were figuring out how does the actual game work, you know what I mean? And
that's Greg Pierce's abilities evolved with how do you pick up an NPC.
Yeah, exactly. And that's very different to in this current period where we're like, well, let's, you know, play around with some other characters where we're like, the game's solid. The gameplay is locked in.
Yeah.
How do we then do interesting things with the game as it stands? And that's where these new characters start to come in. And it's sort of sometimes frustrating because you're like, you have this feeling of like, what else is there? I guess this is again, I'm like, what else is there that's new to do? You know what I mean? How do you iterate on picking up guys, putting down guys, whatever? But then you kind of break through and you're like, oh, wait, what about this? Oh, wait, you could do this. And it's very exciting. Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very fun. It is very fun, adapting a lot of these NPCs into like a bit more like a fleshed out board game character.
Yeah,
because you've got to really pare everything down to kind of like the essence of like, what are they? What do they do? What are the kind of movements and how can we kind of, you know, at least tie what they're doing back to narratively, at least for me, back to their, who they are as a character while number being good and they do something new.
Yeah.
So I'll make sure the number's good.
I'll make sure they're doing something no one else does. Don't worry.
Don't worry about it. We take care
of you. Story. It's good. Everything's going to be all right.
Story. Numbers. Numbers tell the story.
Which is where it's very interesting, and like when we talk about like the actual game itself, it's like because you're like, oh, what new kind of cool thing can
I do? How can we evolve?
I'm very much like the story kind of like narrative. It's like, you know, we tend to be like, oh, those emergent like little stories that happen. Yeah. It's just like, you know, I think it's like I was playtesting like Evelyn Plain, and she's like a very good like on a horse, feels like she's on a horse, charging around the town, and Greg Pierce is like, in one move, I'm just gonna ruin your day.
Yeah.
Felt like you just insulted the horse.
The horse absolutely. And I did it from halfway across the board. Too.
And it was a beautiful moment.
Felt awesome.
It was a beautiful moment. Yeah. I mean, it just felt like, you know, as someone is like, you know, about to like, you know, gallop down a cobblestone street to like, this, you know, fight the monster that's over there.
Yeah.
You were there popping up your head, little loop, being like, "Hey, dickhead!"
Yeah, clang. How about you come over to me? What about that for an idea? Oh, okay.
And then it was just this like beautiful rest of moment.
Your turn, you get to be like, "What the hell am I going to do now?"
And it muted me completely.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, it felt bad, but that felt good.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Big time. But yeah, I mean, what a journey it has been to take these characters from this, you know, just like D&D characters we played in a campaign from so long ago, too.
Yeah.
And then to turn them into very functional, very fun characters to play in a board game.
Leo is like the first D&D character I played.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, God, that's crazy. Funnier.
I had forgotten about that one.
Yeah, me too.
Huh.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's a It's a lot of fun. Like it's crazy. The problems that we've had, it like does like I want to fix them. I want to like how do you solve this?
It's fun and it can be so frustrating as well. Looking at the because you play a whole game and you see knock knock slapped everybody and you go. What? Yeah,
fine. What I just I, rolled really
what
well.
What do I need to change?
Or like it's those moments where you're like, we figured it out, and you feel like you're cock of the walk. Everything feels great, and the next time you play, you're like, that was a bad decision.
Terrible, that's awful.
And because there's so many things that can happen in the game, you balance it for like everything, and then that one scenario pops up, and you're like, he's broken. Greg Piss is broken when this happens, and it's.
When every quest is two items which are already on the same place, and Greg Pierce, because he's just a bit quicker, can do six quests in one go.
Yeah, like we gotta figure
it
out.
Greg Pierce that's broken.
So it's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely, it's been a great time.
Yeah. Also, just a quick update on the Kickstarter.
God damn!
Congratulations, all of us,
everybody. We were asked like, we seen 1,000, and then that's like well done, everyone who followed.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it so much.
I was hoping to come on today to be like, oh hey, and we're going to launch on this date. Just something has come up with like a graphic designer that we were like, oh, we're going to work with, but then something's happened, so we just have to figure that out. Mm-hmm. And it's like we can't lock in the date.
Yeah.
But it is going to be March at some time.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I'll lock in the date.
No. So, yeah. So, it's all locked in, but then, like, something happens. So, unfortunately, hopefully next week
we'll have a date for you.
All locked in. But it should be sometime in March we'll actually launch the Kickstarter.
Which is just unimaginably exciting. Thank you, everybody. Everybody who followed us. People who are, some people are playing it on the board game simulator.
Yeah.
People are getting an idea of it. Like, it's electrifying. Mm. Like, you cannot, from the bottom of my heart, thank you to the people.
And I think, if you are wanting to play it on a tabletop simulator, a new version will be up fairly soon, which will include one of my... once again, stages of grief.
Yeah.
A redesign of the basic cards where we got rid of the city silhouette.
Yeah.
That hurt me like you would not believe. But some things had to get done. And that one did hurt. But yeah, I'll be there. And some new rules that we've played around with as well.
And if you've got any questions about those rules, you can jump into the Sandspace Radio Discord. You can chuck them in the board game channel. Mm-hmm. Or if you're a subscriber to Imagination Adventures, I believe there's a Jaren's Outpost channel.
If there's not, we should make one.
I think there is. I think I was looking today. Mm. But either way, if you've got any questions or any comments, we'd love to hear them, so please chuck them in there.
Presumably all links will be in the notes.
Presumably.
Yeah.
I reckon.
Sure.
Otherwise. You can just type in Sans Pants.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Surely.
Sure.
I got to imagine.
Right. On that note, I've been Joel.
I've been Jackson.
I've been Adam.
We'll see you next week.
See you.